My name is Frank Weltner, and I am the librarian of GeeWatch, and I am here to welcome you to the world today. I would like to thank you for joining me here today. We live in a very vicious and deadly world in which the enemies of peace and of mankind have been operating for thousands and thousands of years. These people have absolutely no interest in stopping the things they are doing to cause wars and to create chaos and suffering. This is what they do. This is what they have always done. And if you think that sitting back or kicking back and watching television, watching the NFL is going to save you, you are totally wrong. And you're playing a deadly game, a game which they control and over which you have absolutely no effect. It's not that you cannot in the future affect them and even bring them to ruin, but it's going to be a very difficult process as long as you're watching their television set, their news channel, their sports venue, their movie venue. Because when you're doing this, you are finding their ideas creeping into your mind, and you are being propagandized without even knowing it. This is not where you want to be. Where you want to be is out on the street with a sign in your hand saying, "Neocons out of the White House," or another sign, "No more wars for Israel," and you need to be on a street corner where thousands and thousands of automobiles and trucks are passing by every hour. Only in this way will you be able to reach the mass of Americans, or the mass of Britons, or the mass of Australians, who need to know that there is something wrong with America. They're not being told in the television set or on the news, but you can tell them, and you need to be out there doing that. I have been an activist all of my life. I've helped groups of young men and women prepare signs, stand on street corners, and to do things which can affect the opinions of the public at large. And only by affecting the opinions of the public at large are you and I ever going to be able to achieve what we want, which is a world that is not run by neocons or with people with a dual purpose in life. For instance, the Zionists who want to use our country to support the terror state of Israel. What we want is for them to sort of go away, get out of our government, get out of our media. And they're not going to do that quietly. Because, as I say, there are people who have controlled this world for thousands and thousands of years. And they're not about to give up because you want them to go away. You're going to have to push them away. You're going to have to make life so unbearable for them to operate that they will naturally go to another country and sink their fangs into its neck and release your own country's neck so that you can have the world that you want here. And the way that you do that is to identify who they are and to expose them. And GeeWatch is one of the ways to find the information that you will utilize in this particular endeavor. Because at GeeWatch you will find the names of the persons who own the media, who run IPAC, who run all of the different properties such as the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center, almost all of whom are a member of a small elitist group. They call themselves Jews when they get into trouble, but otherwise they like to fancy themselves as atheists. But they all see themselves as a member of an international tribe of persons stretching back through history, who have always tried to cooperate with each other, whether they're in Greece or in Italy or in England or in America, to bring as much money as possible to the tribe and to the members of the tribe so that they can have their way with the countries that are foolish enough to allow them to lodge within their borders. It's very difficult to bring a new movement about that will remove these people from the countries where they are ensconced, because they have already pre-propagandized all of your neighbors into thinking that anyone who points out who these people are, meaning that they are Zionists, or that they are members of a small tribe which today are called Jews, but in the past they were called Mongolians because they lived north of China, invaded Russia, and converted to Judaism. So you and I have more Jewish blood in us than these people will ever have. Yet they use the word Jew for themselves. You have to be brave enough to use the word Jew. I've talked with people in Yahoo chat and elsewhere, in Pal Talk, about the problems that we have encountered with the Jews running the media, running IPAC, running the ADL, running the Southern Poverty Law Center, and being able to take our congressmen to Israel for propaganda trips, whereby they give them such a glorious picture of what's going on there that when these congressmen come back to America, they are more than likely to vote billions and billions of dollars of your money and my money for Israel, when in fact they shouldn't be voting a dime for Israel, because Israel is a religious country. It's a country where you have to be Jewish in order to live there or to move there. You have to be Jewish in order to buy land there. If you're a Christian, for instance, you can't go there and buy land, because if it's owned by a Jew, it has to be sold to a Jew. So it is a racist and anti-ethnic country, totally different from America. And yet when the Americans go there, the congressmen, the presidents, etc., for their propaganda trip, they aren't told a thing about that. They're told about what a wonderful democracy Israel is. They also are not told that the reason that the Israelis receive death bombs now and then from children who are strapped with these explosive devices is because the Jews themselves have caused so much trouble in that area, have killed so many people, that the relatives of those people, meaning the children, come to Israel to kill Israelis in order to avenge their dead father or mother, or their dead aunt or uncle or brother or sister. And when you kill people like that with abandon, you can expect them, if they are disarmed, to strap themselves with bombs, to come to your shopping centers, and to kill as many of you as they possibly can. Now, if the United States were to give the Palestinians who have been killed by the terror state of Israel the same number of tanks and armored weaponry that the Israelis have, then I think that you could immediately see an end to the terrorism, an end to the child bombers who go into Israel and blow up the people on buses. Because they wouldn't need them. They would have their own tanks, their own helicopters, their own jet aircraft to bomb Israel with, to get back at Israel for what Israel has done to Palestine. But you and I both know that that is not the way the world works. That the United States is only going to give bombs, planes, and tanks to one side over there, and that is to the Israeli side. And the reason they're going to do that is that Israel has a vice grip on the American government. It owns the media, so when the senators and congressmen are running for office, they have to be cognizant of the fact that if they touch Israel, that's a third rail. It will kill them. It's like stepping onto the third rail of a subway. There's so much electrical juice there that it'll immediately zap you, fry you to a crisp, and ruin your political career. You have to kiss up under Israel, or you are a dead man in Washington, D.C. And that's just the way that it is. And you have to accept that. You have to understand that this is the basis from which your, and I put that in quotes, you, quote you, unquote, your congressmen operate from. They operate from the position that they are going to betray you, who are 98% of this country, for the 2% who aren't like you and who have a special interest in Israel and have been able to utilize their presses, their ownership of the treasury through the banking system, which they dominate. I don't think you've noticed recently that there have been very many people who are Christian who are appointed to the head of the Federal Reserve. Look at Bernanke. You may think that he's a Christian, but you really need to look again. You'll find that he isn't. That he actually comes from this particular tribe. He may say that he's a Christian, but you really need to take a look at him and look at his background, look at his lineage, and so forth. We've had Greenspan, we've had Volcker, we've had a lot of Jewish people in charge of that particular position, head of the Federal Reserve. Why? Because they're the head of the Federal Reserve for the Jewish member banks. And the Jews are not going to allow a mere Gentile to have a position that's that powerful, especially over their own bailiwick, which is the banking system. So they're always going to make sure that a Jew has that position. And if you start seeing non-Jews running that position, you might actually begin to have a little bit of hope that someone in the country at least has the kahunas to appoint someone who might actually take a long look at what these folks are doing down there in their banks. And if that happens, then something good might occur for the nation, and we might be able to pull ourselves out of this sickening Zionist morass in which we find ourselves. It is no secret that Jewwatch is the busiest site for Jewish scholarly study on the internet today. And the reason it is that by going to this one spot, you can find all of the materials that the Jewish people, especially the Zionists and the Judeo-Bolsheviks, wish to hide from you. They don't want you to view their dirty laundry in public. No, they want you to see only what they show you on the History Channel, which they themselves own, in which you look at people who are probably related to you, for instance the Germans, acting in what is called an anti-Semitic manner. But what you will never see is the way in which Jews act in an anti-Gentile manner, and the way in which they murdered 65 million Gentiles in the Soviet Union, and how the Soviet Union was controlled by the Jews themselves. Well, you have to ask yourself, why would bankers who are Jewish support something like the Soviet Union? And of course the banks did support the Soviet Union. In fact, it was a Jew by the name of Jacob Schiff in the United States who ran the largest bank here, which at the turn of the century was the Guarantee National Bank in New York. He was also the head of the Chamber of Commerce here in the United States. You have to ask yourself, why would someone like that constantly play with Russian currency, destroying the Tsar's war against the Japanese in the 1890s and bringing Russia to ruin by the manipulation of that currency, by selling dollars, pounds, and rubles, so that rubles always lost out? Why would a Jew in New York do that? Well, the reason he did was that way before the Jews took over the Soviet Union, they were attempting to do so. Back in the 1840s, 50s, and 60s, the Jews were extremely radical, extremely socialist, extremely communist. Karl Marx wrote his Das Kapital in the mid-1800s, and this was used as the Bible of the Jewish communist movement all over Europe during the turn of the century. What they did was to take an economic system which was highly theoretical, something that would only be of interest to bankers and capitalists, and they began to utilize it to propagandize Gentiles, to tell them, look, we need to have communism, we need to have a new economic system, these people are screwing you. And by these people they meant the monarchists, the people who own the land, etc., and that the land needed to be redistributed, the factories needed to be realigned so that the workers controlled things, etc., etc., etc. One thing the Jews did not want to have was a Russia or an England or a Germany that had a Kaiser or a Tsar or a king. The reason being, when a king is put on the throne, he is taken behind a curtain and anointed with holy Christian oil, because he is a consecrated monarch, consecrated by Jesus Christ. The Jews don't like that because they cannot be consecrated by Jesus Christ. And so they've always known that monarchies are not something that they wish to live under. Because monarchists, being Christian, when they see that the Jews are stealing too much from their own people, taking advantage of them through their vicious contracts, through their vicious usury system, sometimes will kick the Jews out of the country. So if they can get rid of the Tsar or a Kaiser or a king, they have a much better chance of totally exploiting any democratic situation. In fact, they could even be the titular head of a government, as they were in the Soviet Union once they murdered the Tsar and his innocent children. You don't hear a whole lot about that on the History Channel. You don't hear that the Jews ran the entire Red Revolution and that it was funded from New York and from Stockholm and from Oslo and from London, and that it was the Jewish bankers who were paying the bills, buying the guns, buying the explosives. I want you to take a look at your television set or your newspaper. Just one more time, I would really like for you to turn these things off entirely because they don't do any good for you. They're simply propaganda pieces for the world's banking system. And you have to be a banker or an insurance person to be able to afford a TV station or a radio station or a newspaper. In my city of St. Louis, the Post-Dispatch was sold for $1 billion. Do you have $1 billion? I don't think that you do. Only someone with a friendly association with the Jewish banking system can assemble that amount of money, which is why the Jews own the New York Times, the Washington Post, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News. Oh, I know you've been told that Fox News is owned by a Gentile. But if you go to Jew Watch and look up Rupert Murdoch, you'll see that he is a Jew. You'll see that his mother's name was Elizabeth Green, and it's all been hushed up and put under the carpet until he was outed by Jew Watch. These things are hidden from you, and they're hidden from you for a reason. They don't want you to know what a sucker they are playing you for. But that is exactly what they are doing. They're playing you for a sucker. But what can you do? You don't own the media. 95% of all publishing houses are Jewish owned. They're not going to rat on themselves. That's just not what people do. They buy these properties to protect their own people and to propagandize you so that this small 2% of America can control the other 98% through propaganda and persuasion and motivation and through deception. And they're going to continue to do it as long as they can. And it will take violence. It will take something other than economics to pull them from their throne of deception, whereby they are ruining your people and your country and your culture and your way of life, because they have absolutely no love for you. In fact, they hate you with a passion, as can be seen by the policies of immigration of people who are not like you into your country, people from totally foreign cultures whom you find disgusting. So disgusting that you have to go to sensitivity training in order to overcome your natural instinct to reject these people forthwith the moment that you see them. If you liked these people, if it were natural and instinctive for you to like these people, you would not have to go to some schizophrenic forum, which is usually led by some man or woman from another group, totally different from yours, and be told that groups that you have noticed have not acted or behaved very nicely in the present or in the past are actually really nice people, even though they may be hooked on crack. They may slap their wives. They may steal things. They may do a lot of things that are absolutely ignorant and that you've read about in the paper. And relatives of theirs do it also. And if they move into your neighborhood, they might destroy your neighborhood. But nonetheless, you're supposed to go into the sensitivity training and be brainwashed, because this is what the Jews want. They want to replace your group with all of these other groups. They want you to feel their pain. And that's exactly what they try to do in these sensitivity studies, is to make you feel your pain. I just read some crazy university-level piece of balderdash about white studies, in which it basically said that anyone in white studies was a liar and a deceiver, because white people deserve to die. They deserve to be destroyed, because white people exist only to exploit others. Well, that's very interesting, because I always felt that as a white person, I was being exploited. I have to pay taxes so that people who are not white can get different Social Security products, such as aid to dependent children and so forth, SSI. So the people who are totally retarded can receive checks. People on drugs can receive checks. They can receive psychiatric treatment to make them feel less unwanted in a world in which they really cannot function because they don't have the intelligence to pass eighth grade. But you and I have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars a month on psychiatric care, medical care, housing, food, etc., when in fact these people could actually be working on a farm as a day laborer making some kind of a wage. But we don't make them do that. Instead, we have Mexicans come in across the border illegally and take those particular positions so that our retarded people can live as a kind of quasi-royalty, although it's on a very, very low level of existence. This is not a good way to order society, but this is the way it has been ordered by our enemies, and it is one of the ways that has been used to bleed us of whatever funds we make from our own hard work by giving it to people who themselves, if they were looked upon as workers like we are, would be forced out into the field to do their work, or into a factory. I've worked in factories, I've worked in fields. A lot of people who look like me have worked in factories and in fields. And we've had to pay taxes for those who could work in those fields and factories, but won't, because they don't have to. The government has, under the Zionist system that we have, the communist system, the Judeo-Bolshevik system that many parts of our government function to support, these people refuse to work. They don't have to. Oh, look, this person's retarded. He or she doesn't have to work. Whereas, as a matter of fact, there are millions of retarded people who work. I am a librarian. We used to hire retarded people to stack books because they found it a very, very interesting occupation. A really smart person can't do that because they get bored, but a retarded person will file books all day long and go home with a smile, because it is a challenge to them. It is just slightly at the level at which they can function, and function well, because they look at the numbers, they look at the letters, they line them up on the shelf, they put the book there, they pat it into place, they go on to the next book. And they're very, very good at it. Yes, there are things that the retarded can do even better than those who are super intelligent. Now, you need to ask yourself, and you're probably asking yourself right now, why in the world would bankers want to make retarded people into playthings of the government who don't have to work, when in fact they can work? They can work on farms, they can work in factories, they can work in libraries, they can even answer telephones. They could do very well as an operator for a phone company, and they can also sort all sorts of reports and papers before they go to an executive's desk, because they're good at that sort of thing. They just need to be told how to do it, and then they can function. Instead, the government wants to pay them tens of thousands of dollars to sit on their duff at home doing nothing. And, as I have said, they want to use Mexicans and other immigrants to come in here and to do the work that the retarded can naturally do, and do better. And the reason that the Mexicans can do it so well is that many of them operate on a kind of semi-retarded level because they don't speak English. If I were to place you as an English-speaking person into Mexico, and you knew no Mexican whatsoever, you would be, as far as they are concerned, a retarded individual. You would be unable to read their newspapers, to do many of the things that people commonly are able to do because they can discuss things with each other. So your usefulness would be extremely limited. Now, under the United States system, if you went to Mexico and couldn't function, you would be given a check every month, a free place to live, and food to eat so that you could reproduce your stupidity so that you would have more and more children like you, because basically, since all you're going to do if you're treated like that is sit around and have children, what other entertainment are you going to have but to make love to your wife? So you're going to have more and more of these dysfunctional people that you represent in Mexico, or at least until they learn Spanish. And you ask yourself, well, why would they want to do this? And the reason they want to do this is to weaken you as the majority of people. They want you to spend your money on taxes to pay for people who are retarded, because it means that you have less time on your hand to undermine the status quo. And the bankers, the media owners, the corporate factory owners, These are the people who determine the status quo, who run the status quo, and who profit from it. You are given precious little. You think that you're wealthy because you live in the United States and not in Morocco, but I can assure you that people in Morocco think that they live pretty nicely over there. What you have now, as an American, you work yourself to death 8 to 10 hours a day, and you barely have enough money to afford a television set, a radio, an iPod, maybe a little computer, maybe some DSL for your family, and that's it. Yeah, you're able to heat your house and cool it just barely, but you're pinching your pennies constantly because you either rent for $600-800 a month, or you pay that much or more to purchase a house plus the taxes on it, which is also a form of renting your own property from the local government. And you don't have much spending money left after you buy your car and your clothes. You're basically on poverty level. In fact, if I were to take your electricity away and your automobile and take your television, your little computer, your iPod away, your radios, you'd be sitting in 1865, where no matter how hard you worked, you couldn't have a radio or a television or a car because they didn't exist. And the only reason you have them is that somebody invented them, and then some banker was able to eventually get a hold of the company that owned the patents, ship the production off to the offshore areas where people work as slaves for them, and then sell it to you at a rather reasonable price. In fact, they sell the same television set to people in Morocco who you think are poor. But I can assure you that the people in Morocco are listening to radio, they're watching TV, and they're probably eating better than you do. Because if you're American, you're probably a fat pig. You're probably fat and sitting there listening to me. So for you to go out and protest would be very difficult for you, because you'd have to walk on your feet. And since 75% of Americans are obese, I assume that that's the position that you're in. Yes, that would be my assumption. Because for me to assume otherwise would mean that these figures are incorrect, and what my eyes show me at the supermarkets and the malls are incorrect. Americans are people who walk as little as possible, park as close to the store as they can, and overeat. When an American eats a candy bar, the candy bar weighs a quarter of a pound. When a Frenchman eats a candy bar, it might be the size of the first third of his little finger. He just wants the taste of it. But the French are getting fat. The Germans are fatter than we are. The British are fat. Everybody is getting fat. Why? Because of the society and the way in which everything is being run. They don't want you to be healthy. They don't want you to be vigorous, because vigorous, healthy people are warlike. Vigorous, healthy people are a threat to the bankers, to the media, and to other people who control your money and want to continue to control it. So if they can give you enough food so that you are fat and content to work 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day, so that most of your money goes through the wallet of the bankers, they are very, very happy about it. And one of the reasons you're fat is you have nothing else to do after you work, and your work is probably consists of sitting in front of a computer, answering a phone. You don't have to pick the phone up, it's on a headset, so you don't even have to move your arms, and reading something off of a screen to someone who asks you a question. It's called database management, and you are simply a talking mouth that explains the database to a customer who can't look at the computer. But eventually the customer will look at the computer and you'll be out of a job, because they'll be able to look it up instantly on the internet themselves. And you better get used to that fact, because that will be coming. And once that happens, you will be like a Moroccan, sitting around at home with very little money. But you know what? Don't fret about it, because your life won't be that much different than it is today. Because today you have absolutely nothing anyway. Like I say, you got a television set, you have a car that you can drive a little bit, but you can only afford a vacation now and then, and some of you can't even afford a vacation, and many of you don't even have health insurance. So don't tell me how wealthy you are. Don't say, oh, I live in a country where I'm so wealthy. No, you live in a country where you can buy Wheaties out of a box, whereas the person in Morocco buys a bag of wheat and makes his own Wheaties. But he eats the same thing that you do. You're no different than those people. They have shoes. They have socks. They have underwear. They have robes. They have sandals. Whatever they want, they have it. People are not sitting around in Morocco naked. They're not sitting in Vietnam naked. The same Chinese that compete on expensive skis at the Olympics in 2006 and in 2010 are the same people that you are. There isn't any difference. And you need to get that out of your head, that you are so superior to these people economically, because you're basically in a condition of poverty. But your political poverty is almost as bad as your physical poverty and your economic poverty. You'll probably never, by the way, own your own home. You'll probably always have a loan. There are only like 5% of the people, I believe, in America that own their own home. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. We have a negative saving rate here in this country. What you are is simply a consumer who works, goes to the mall, and the money goes around in a circle. And more of it goes in the pocket of the bankers and less of it into your pocket. You have things. You have things that you destroy your life working for. Things which break and which you have to replace. And they're made so they'll break and they have to be replaced. And you have become such a finicky person that you have to always be mesmerized by something new. And when you see something new, you are trained to want it. You're trained to want something that is new and not to be satisfied with what you have. That's your problem. That's why it is so easy for these people to manipulate and control you and your nation. What has happened to you is this. You're living under the Jewish feudalist system. This is a Jewish feudal system. A feudal system is where you have a castle, and the peasants live around the castle, and everything that they live in is owned by the king of that castle. And the castle is there with huge walls to keep you from stealing what the king has. And if you become rebellious, these stone walls will keep you from finding your way inside to kill the king and his wife and children and take control of your lives, because he is determined to continue to control your life and your children and your wife forever, and to make you work for him to produce wheat and corn, potatoes, cattle, milk, cheese, to tend the lands, to keep your house in order, and to maybe even have his way with your daughter or your wife whenever he wants to. Now, in America, we have a very similar situation. Sure, the banker doesn't have his way with your wife, unless she works at the bank, in which case you don't know what she does there during the day. She might meet somebody and do something you have no idea of knowing. Whereas in the castle feudal system, everyone was so close to the king that it was quite easy for the king or the nobles to have his way with the peasants' wives and children. And they did so frequently. Well, they have their way with your wife and children, but they do it by taking your wife out of the house where she can't raise children and putting her into a factory or into some sort of an office where she works 8 hours a day just like you do. And by doing this, they accomplish a greater impoverishment of your family. Let me repeat that. By having your wife work, they create a greater impoverishment of your family. And they've always known that, and you have never known that, but I'm going to tell you why you are further impoverished because your wife works. It used to be that the husband worked, the wife stayed at home, and that was the way it was. And the husband always had enough money to buy a house and could even pay off the house. The wife would raise the children, and if you had parents who were aging, she and you would help raise them. They would be upstairs in the house. And you all live there together. Well, today under the nuclear family, that's all broken up. The concept that you see in the Waltons television program is totally gone. But that's the way we used to live. An extended family, extended house, where the children eventually cared for their parents as they became doddering idiots. And they tolerated them, they lived with them, and they buried them. And the parents did not go to a nursing home. They went into the bedroom, and they were nursed by the parents and the grandchildren, knowing full well that they too would be nursed when their time came to become as infirm as the grandparents were. It was something that went around in a circle that the families did. And there was plenty of time for it because the father was the only one that went out and worked. The children went to school some, but they didn't go as often as they do now. They used to go to school for maybe 4, 5, 6 years, enough to learn how to read and write, so they could read the Bible and read a newspaper and add and subtract enough to run a household or a farm. Now, granted, there's a lot more knowledge now, and we have kids going to school 12 years to get out of high school instead of 4. And, of course, they learn more, but what they learn beyond reading and writing and arithmetic isn't a whole heck of a lot when you really think about it. A lot of it's just babysitting and basketball and football and baseball and dating. Then they go to college, and there's more basketball, football, and dating and a little bit of study. As a matter of fact, when you really look at it, we're not getting much out of our educational system because most of our scientists are coming from overseas. More and more of them are coming from India and from Pakistan and from China and from Japan because our kids don't want to be scientists. They don't want to be engineers anymore. It used to be, before we became so wealthy, a lot of our kids became scientists and engineers, but it doesn't pay enough. So they want to be a banker, or they want to be someone who works in insurance, or someone who does sales. They don't want to be somebody productive, someone creative like an engineer, although there are some that would like to do that, probably. But if there were enough, we're talking 300 million people here in America, you would think that we would be able to get thousands of engineers and scientists, wouldn't you? But our children don't want to do that. Well, they tell us our children don't want to do that. The real reality of it is there are so many teachers and so many universities, and it's become a growth engine for our government to have foreigners come in and learn at our universities. Of course, when the foreigner is learning at the university, it means that an American has found his spot taken by a foreigner. And some of the foreigners who come here are extremely intelligent, and the Americans don't do quite as well as some of them. So they give up and go into something easier. And that's bad. That's very, very bad, because if the foreigner weren't here, these Americans who want to be engineers and want to be scientists, who might not be quite as good at it academically, would nonetheless persist in it and become successful engineers, architects, scientists, chemists, whatever. Because there is no lacking of brain power in the majority race in the United States of America. In fact, there are plenty of African Americans in this country who become successful engineers and scientists and architects. Of course, they're a minority, so there's not as many of them. Look at the Jewish people. They're 2%. Look at the number of architects, scientists, and engineers that the Jews produce. How is it that the European Americans, who are Gentiles, aren't able to produce at the level of the Jews? Well, I think when you realize that Harvard is 60% Jewish, both among the students and among the faculty and among the administrators, that there might be a little bit of hanky-panky there in terms of who gets into Harvard, who gets into medical school, who gets into the engineering schools. And if you have that much power as a minority, and you have a certain dislike for the majority, you feel that they're threatening, why wouldn't you want to bring more Chinese and more Pakistanis and Indians and more Japanese in here to take the place of the majority American so that you can push them down on a social level, disarm them, make them less likely to be able to do anything to you that you don't want them to do? Why not weaken them? because this would be in your interest as a Jewish person who is running Harvard and running Yale. And if anybody complains, like Frank Weltner at Jew Watch and the World Today, well, we'll just call him an anti-Semite and we'll try to marginalize him. But if he calls us a Jew, oh, we're going to call him an anti-Semite. Now, it's okay for us to be anti-Gentile, but for anyone to be an anti-Semite, well, then, you know, if it doesn't quite register, we'll bring up something that happened 60 years ago so that people think, oh, he must be one of those neo-Nazis or some Hitlerian type who wants to kill, oh, those poor little Jewish people. Well, methinks that the Jews protest too much their victimology, since they're the ones who killed the 65 million Christians in Russia under Leon Trotsky, who was a New Yorker and a Jew by the name of David Bronstein. But the Jew isn't going to tell you that. He doesn't want you to know. He doesn't want you to know that the Jew, Jacob Schiff, gave millions of dollars to Trotsky to take over to Russia, to destroy white Russia and Christianity, to kill the Tsar, to kill his children, to kill everybody in the government, so the Jews could run the place in a field of murder. No, they don't want you to know that. They don't want you to know that Adolf Hitler was made necessary because the Jews were trying to do this to Germany and have been trying to do it for 100 years. And if they had taken over Germany, they would have done the same thing they did in the Soviet Union. They would have killed the cream of German intellectuality. They would have killed their engineers, their scientists, and began importing people from other countries to take their place and to run their universities the way they're running the United States universities, so that only foreigners can take these lucrative positions, can become physicians, can become attorneys, can become lawyers, etc. Or, if they're Jewish, of course, you could do it as well. But oh, poor you, if you're some kind of Gentile who is a white American, that would be wrong, because that might be threatening to the 2% who are Jewish. You need to be reduced, marginalized, and eventually wiped off the face of your own country, so that these people who have done this for centuries, they did it in Rome, they were able to make sure that in the last 100 years Rome didn't have a single Roman in charge of Rome. It was all Vandals and Huns and people like that. They were able to remove all of the Romans, who finally sequestered themselves in Constantinople behind huge walls and were able to hold on for another 1,000 years before the Huns, who became the Roman Catholics, were able to help the Turks to figure out how to get into the city, because they had gone in and they had kind of sniffed the place out. And they didn't want the Orthodox Christian Church to remain there anyway, so they gave it to the Turks. They gave it to the Turks. Yes, the Christians gave their brothers to the Turks. Why? For the same reason the Jews are giving up the white American Christian to the Chinese and the Japanese and the Pakistanis who are coming to America to take the engineering and mathematician positions in this country. Because they know that the future is science and math, and that by bringing foreigners in to take those positions, they will further marginalize the majority people in this country and bring them to ruin, which is what any minority that wants to be in control will always want to be doing. To come into a huge majority country and to destroy the majority and to mix the place up, sort of like divide and conquer. And the whites are not above doing this. We did this in Africa when we went in into Africa and we got different tribes to fight with each other. We made alliances with them so that we had whole kingdoms there where the Africans worked for us. It was very nice for us, but it wasn't very nice for the Africans. And what the Jews are doing here in America isn't very nice for the Europeans either. Nor was it ever meant to be. This is a slave factory for the bankers, for the Jews. It is a place where the politics of America is to do the work of Israel, of the Zionists, of the great terror killers of Palestine, who have destroyed that people's place in history and are intent on continuing to do so using our power, our military, our wealth, and the arms and legs of our children, who are having their arms and legs blown off in Iraq every day of the week for the Jews. And when the American soldiers come down the road in their Humvees to be blown up by mules who are driving cars that they do not know have explosives in them, as they're driving down the road, the Iraqis are saying, "Here come the Jews. Here come the Zionists, because we are looked upon as a nation run by Jews, and our army is looked upon as a Zionist Jewish army." And if you lived in Iraq, you would know exactly why they think that. And since you live in America, you should also know, because you know full well that Iraq has nothing to do with anything that our country wants. Do we want the oil? Well, if we wanted the oil, Saddam Hussein was more than willing to sell it to us at a cut rate. Chavez is willing to sell us oil at a cut rate in Yugoslavia, but since he's a socialist and he has ties with Iran and with Syria and China, we don't want to do business with him. Now, we have ties with Syria, Iran, and China, but we don't want these other people to get into any kind of a alliance that might go counter to our bankers. And Chavez has shown quite a bit of independence from the International Monetary Fund. He doesn't want much to do with it. He's not really concerned with money. He's concerned with his people having a good life. He's not concerned with the bankers making money. He's concerned with the little guy not having to pay a premium just to purchase money to purchase a house. Because here in America and all over the world, when you buy a house, you're no longer buying a house, you're buying a loan. A loan that goes on for the rest of your life, and that you will probably never be able to pay off. If you have just one child, you'll never pay it off, because you'll have to continue to put your child through school, and it will cost you a fortune. In countries like Morocco, you can have all the children you want, because you own your house. Banking is not allowed. Usury is not allowed, so once you own their house, there's no way that a banker is going to get it away from you. And you certainly wouldn't sell it, because you wouldn't be that much of a fool. Why would you want to sell it? It's where you live. And you'll live there forever, and your family has probably been there for hundreds of years. But in America, your family will never be anywhere hundreds of years, because a minority will come in and push you out of your neighborhood within 30 years. The half-life of communities in America is somewhere between 15 and 30 years today. If you're living in an all-white area, it'll probably be black or Hispanic in the next 15 to 30 years. And you will be run all over the land here in the United States in order to find a place where you can live with your own people. And if you mention it, you're called a racist and a bigot. It's interesting that the Zionists don't want Palestinians to live in Israel, but if you don't want to live with blacks or with Arabs in your neighborhood, well, you're a bigot. But you see, that's the way in which people who want to run the lives of others have always been. Hypocritical, deceptive, and lying. It's simply a way of life. It's what they must do in order to control people when they're a minority. Of course, while you're listening to my voice, the Humvees are rolling through the Middle East, filled with Americans, many of whom are minorities, who came here and were able to get in order to serve the needs of the army that does the work of the Zionists who run our government. They call themselves neocons, but they're really Jewish people is what they are. But they're not going to call themselves Jews. I mean, no one's going to be able to run the White House by saying, "Oh, look, I am a Jew and I'm here to run the White House." No, that can't be done. We always say something like, "I'm a communist and I'm here to help you." or I'm a capitalist and I'm here to help you, or I'm a new conservative and I'm here to help you. You see, it's a part of deception. They have to hide behind the veil. Because if you know who they are, you're not going to vote for them. Now, I know that some of you are saying, well, what is this deal that communism and capitalism and banking are the same? And I want you to simply open your newspaper and take a peeky-poo at what you're looking at there. Your newspaper is probably liberal. There are very few conservative papers in this world today. And the editorials are probably liberal and not conservative, unless you're in a strange town that has a conservative newspaper, which doesn't really happen a whole lot. I want you to look in that newspaper, and probably the first page is all news. But when you go to that second page, I'll bet you that the news comes down to 20 to 50% of the page, and the rest of it is made up of advertising for some capitalist pig industry like banking or automobiles or fur coats or some expensive department store that's owned by some Jew. Take a look. Open your paper and take a look. And with the further you go back, you'll get eventually to the point where you'll only get 10% of your news on a page. And on some pages, you'll have 100% ads. In fact, the newspaper in St. Louis usually has about 100% ads toward the back of the first section. The first section is very thin with news, and more and more of the news comes from AP and Reuters and places like that, because they don't want to hire anybody on the local level. What they're there for is to sell ads. So you look at your liberal newspaper that's there to stand up for the little guy, and what you'll find is that the people that support it are the people that want to screw the little guy. General Motors, Ford, Toyota, Mitsubishi, Panasonic, Apple iPod, all the people that want to get the money out of your pocket. The banker who has mortgage loans and the mortgage company who has even lower mortgage rates than the bank. These people that want to sign you up for this and that. The real estate moguls who want you to sell your house and who want to bring blacks into your area, whom you don't want to live with, not because they're black, because you've tried that, but because of their behavior once they get into your neighborhood. Because if they were good people, you'd love to live with them. But if they move to your neighborhood and they start hooking your kids on dope and acting like idiots all night long and making noise and threatening you, well, then you feel like you have to move out. And then the Jew in the newspaper will call you a bigot and say that you are an example of a Ku Klux Klanman or a neo-Nazi who has participated in white flight. Well, they never print where they live, but if you do investigations and find out where the reporters live and the editorialists in your newspaper and the people who own it, I will tell you right now that 1,000 to 1, you will find that they do not live with the black people that you probably run from and they run from. They're nothing but liars and deceivers. They're not going to live with these folks. And the blacks probably don't want to live with your sorry rear end either. They have their own culture. They don't need yours. But this idea of mixing people together is a Jewish idea that is used to destroy and marginalize the majority. They turn everything upside down so that the minority rules. If the Jews don't run America, then America is, by definition in a newspaper, a bigoted country. Why is it bigoted? Because Jews don't run it. That's why it's bigoted. You won't let us run it. We're 2%. You won't let us have our way. You are a bigot. That's the golden rule. When you have gold in your pocket and you can own the media, you can define things the way you want to. And you'll get by with it because you're the only one that gets to write there. Do you think you have freedom of speech? You go down to your local newspaper with an article about how the newspaper is a capitalist enterprise that pretends to be socialistic in its commentary, but sells to those who want to screw people over, and does the work of the devil in terms of advertising for banks, for automotive companies, for people who just want to lure you into a store and take your money, when in fact if you never saw the ads, you wouldn't want those products anyway. Because they're not going to do anything in terms of helping you as a person. It's information that Well, it's just too much information. You don't need that kind of information. You need information that tells you not to go out and buy stuff, not to work your rear end off, to have your wife stay home. By the way, when your wife goes to work and you go to work, you're screwing yourself. And the reason you are is that you now have two salaries, which means that the two of you will have enough money to pay more for a house. And the realtors know this. Like if you're making $30,000 and your wife stays at home, you can only afford a house that's worth maybe $90,000 or $100,000 at most. But your wife works, so you make $55,000 between you or $60,000. You can now pay $240,000 for a house. So you see, no matter how much you earn, since you can pay more for your house and more for your car, they'll charge you more because they charge whatever they can get. So you're just screwing yourself over by having your wife work. All of you out there who are having your wife work instead of staying at home, it's costing you a fortune. Because the real estate people are using her salary as the basis for pricing on that home. And since she works and you work, they're able to get double for the house what they would normally get. And that's why houses continue to rise as more and more women work. And as more and more immigrants come into the country and need housing, the housing goes higher and higher yet. This is a problem. If we didn't let the immigrants in, if the women didn't work, our houses would cost us very, very little, and we as men would be able to support our women. Our women, if the husband stayed at home, would be able to support their men very, very easily. But because we all work now, we're all exploited. And since we're all exploited, the price of everything doubles, quadruples, to the point where they get every penny back that is earned. You cannot get ahead under the system. Because the system is there to make sure that you don't, and to make sure that all of your money and all of your labor is funneled into the pockets of the Jewish bankers who are sitting at the top of this pyramid, at that very point at the top, and everything filters up to them, and a little bit of it filters down to you. And that's the way it's run. I want to welcome you to the Jewish feudal system in which America is ensconced. Yes, the Jewish feudal system. You think you're so modern? The Jew is at the top of the castle, and you are taking all of your grain, all of your gold, all of your coins, into the castle, and it floats to the top of the pyramid where the Jew is waiting to count it. And since it all goes through him, he's able to define the price of everything that you purchase. And it doesn't matter. Whatever you purchase, the money goes into a coffer, which eventually runs over to the bank by the end of the day and goes up the pyramid to the top pinnacle where the Jews are able to look at the ledgers and to understand how much they have cheated you out of every given day of the week. I want to thank you for listening to The World Today. It's been a little bit different. Instead of reading articles that have happened on a daily basis which show Jewish power in the world, I decided that I would put some of my 60-plus years of wisdom and observation together into a conversational style to show you what I have synthesized from the vast amounts of history and news that I have been in contact with for decades, which have helped me as a librarian to get all of this information together, which I have placed into JewWatch so that you can find it in a library, where everything is easily findable in an index that is intuitive, something that the Jews don't want you to see or to have as a tool at your disposal. Because JewWatch threatens the very basis of Jewish power, which is deception. And they don't want their deceptions to be made known to you. They don't want you to know about Trotsky's real name, David Bronstein. They don't want you to know that Lenin grew up in a Yiddish household and that his wife was Jewish because communism was Jewish and he was Jewish. They'll tell you that he was Christian when he wasn't. They'll say the same thing about Stalin. They'll say about Stalin, well, he was raised in a nunnery. I don't think he was much of a Christian, marrying three Jewish ladies, so that all of his children were Jewish. He was a Jew. In fact, his real name was Dushvegle, which means Jewison, or little Jew, or little son of a Jew. They don't want you to know that. They don't want you to know the first president of the Soviet Union's name was Sverdlov, who was a Jew, and that Lazarus Kaganovich, the butcher of the Ukraine, was the brother-in-law of Joseph Stalin. They don't want you to know that Gingrich Yagoda, the butcher of Petrograd, was a Jew. And he came into Petrograd every night, killing Russians who didn't fight back. You see, they will kill you if you don't fight back, because they've done it in the past, and if you don't learn from the past, then you will relive the past, and they will kill you. They will kill you. You say, oh, well, they wouldn't possibly do that. Well, take a look at Israel. Murder, murder everywhere. Murder most foul. That's what Israel's all about. And that's what America's all about. And you will be murdered. If they can't wipe you out any other way, they will murder you. Once they get their total control, they will send out their guards to get you. That's what happened in Petrograd. Van loads of Jews would come in and arrest people, take them outside of town they were never heard of again. We found out later what happened to them. They were taken outside of town, shot in the back of the head, and disposed of and hidden where they would never be found again. It's probably one reason why we are so intense on getting rid of people like Saddam Hussein, is that it's almost a way that the Jews are confessing that they themselves need to be punished for what they did in the Soviet Union. By taking out dictators like Saddam Hussein, they're able to perhaps make up for what they did in the Soviet Union by killing 65 million of us. And maybe also to expiate their guilt over the thousands of deaths at their cruel hands in Israel. These are vile and mean people who intend to make you think that they are victims, but they are making you the victim. And they will always make you the victim. And you must stand up for yourself. And you must take back your country and your world, or they will kill you.